Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario. In my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the 1858 Bradford Sweets poisoning. Here's what you need to know.
Candy, candy, come on little ones. Lollipops, milk duds, my peppermint lozenges are the best in town. They're perfectly safe.
Of all the things one might look forward to in Bradford, England in 1858, a popular peppermint-flavored candy called a humbug from the local sweets shop was usually at the top of the list. Little did anyone know that one fateful Saturday afternoon in October, the same humbugs that had long been sold at William Hardiker's shop were laced with deadly arsenic. Hardiker was known in town as Humbug Billy and had no idea he was selling a batch of poisonous candy from his stall. He had ordered the peppermint lozenges, as usual, from a wholesale confectioner named Joseph Neal. Neal, like many confectioners of the time, would often alter the recipe of his sweets in order to produce them at a cheaper rate. Because sugar was the most expensive ingredient, Neal regularly replaced it with a calcium compound known as Terra Alba, or DAFT. On Monday, October 18, 1858, Neal sent one of his lodgers to pick up some DAFT from Charles Hodgson, a local druggist, in order to fulfill Hardiker's latest order. Hodgson happened to be sick that day, so he asked his assistant, William Goddard, to fulfill Neal's order. Hodgson told Goddard that the DAFT was in a cask in the attic, but Goddard made a fatal mistake and filled the order from a cask of arsenic instead of DAFT. Neal went on to make the lozenges with the arsenic, which noticeably altered the color and texture of the candies. After tasting the new batch, Neal and his assistant both became sick, but neither attributed their illness to the candies. Therefore, on Saturday, October 30th, Neal delivered them to Hardiker, who also noticed the color of this latest batch was off. He still accepted the candies, though refused to pay full price. Hardiker also became violently ill after tasting one of the humbugs and left for home, leaving the unknowingly poisonous peppermint candies for sale to the general public. By Saturday morning, reports of sudden deaths were rapidly spreading across town, including several children who had innocently popped the sweet treats that would tragically cut their young lives short. Fun Facts, aka Death Stats. A total of 20 people were killed by ingesting the poisonous lozenges, half of them children. Several hundred people fell violently ill in Bradford and as far away as Leeds and Manchester. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello, hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest is comedian and friend Suni Reyes. Hi, Suni.
Hola.
Whoa, wait, what?
Oh my God, what?
What did you say?
Oh no, we've made a terrible mistake.
Hold on, does she know the podcast is in English? We have to cancel. We're going to reschedule. Clayton, this is your first day. You didn't explain to
Amanda didn't tell me this would happen.
Suni, hi. Say hi to our listeners.
Yay, hi, everyone. I can speak English. That's amazing.
Oh, my God. Just a quick Ingles sin barreras, and she's off to the races.
Oh, my gosh.
Suni, we're so happy to, you know, have you here today. We, you know, usually like to start off our show by asking our guests, what is something that is recently alarming you? What's keeping you up at night?
I think dentists.
Okay. Oh, good one.
Right. The global pandemic, but yeah, sure, dentists.
Yeah, it's just, you know, exactly that, because the global pandemic didn't allow us to take care of our dental hygiene how we used to. And at least in this house, you know, this week has been like, oh, we need to go to the dentist. And I took my son to the dentist, and it was terrifying because they were like, we're going to pull out 4 teeth. Because, oh. And I'm like, but they're not, there's no, you know, because usually you, when you get your teeth pulled out, it's because it's a wisdom tooth. Yeah. You know, but this is a kid and they're baby teeth. And it just sounded like a horror movie in my head. And I'm like, how do we know dentists are good? Like, how do we know they're not, you know, actual murderers? I don't know. Like, it's
we
just
need a dentist episode.
Yeah. Stat.
I mean, supposedly we need to make space for like the big boy teeth. But I was like, whoa, what's going on? Then my dog broke a tooth, a molar. And, you know, it's a whole like tooth situation here in my house. So I'm just like skeptical of dentists, and do they want to kill us or are they actually helping?
The age old question.
I mean, I really relate to that. I don't know. That just hit home to me because, you know, that's why it's like, you got to build trust with these people, I guess. Right. Mm. You got to trust them. But if you go in there and the first go round, they're like, all right, unfortunately, you don't deserve your teeth. And I get all the teeth now. Mm. Are you like, okay, I guess I can build my trust off of this guy who's telling me all my teeth need to come out.
Right.
So you, in your world, dentists just collect teeth. Whoa. It's not about money. It's
yeah. Yeah. Like, where are you? Like, the first option is pulling out. Like, my dog's teeth need to be pulled out. She has 2 molars that apparently are like, you know, not good anymore. We gotta pull them out. And then my son's teeth, they had to be pulled them out. And I'm like, where are you selling these teeth? Are you selling them in the, you know, black market somewhere where they want, like, I don't know.
It's not about charging you or your, you know, dental insurance or any of that. It's more about the black market.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. But it is a good point. You know, pandemic has cost us not to go to the dentist. We probably have more cavities. It's a vicious cycle. We're all slowly dying. And that's a perfect transition.
It actually is.
It actually is.
Really
this never
good.
Happens.
Wow. Suni set you up. Suni set you up.
I did not plan this at all.
This is what friends are for. This is the perfect transition into talking about the Bradford sweets poisoning. Our teeth, okay? No, that's not our teeth. It's a poisoning, but you know, you get what I mean. And
wow, we really handed you an actually good transition.
And I really messed it up.
And you're totally.
It's literally impossible. It's impossible.
Candy, teeth.
Candy, teeth. Here we go.
What gives you cavities?
I could have just said that.
It's like a spoonful of sugar for you. Come on, yeah. Take it.
There you go. So let's start. I kind of wanted to start off by doing a history of Bradford, the town. Let's get us in the mood. Let's get us into 1858. In the late 18th century and early 19th century, Bradford grew very rapidly. In 1780, it had a population of about 4,500 people. By 1801, it had more than 6,000 inhabitants. By 1851, the population of Bradford had reached an incredible 103,000 people. The huge rise in population was partly due to immigration from Germany and Ireland. However, like all industrial cities in those days, Bradford was dreadfully unsanitary. In 1848 to 49, 420 people died during a cholera epidemic. At the turn of the 19th century, it's a small market town. And wool is spinning and cloth weaving was carried out in local cottages and farms. By 1841, there were 38 worsted mills in Bradford and 70 in the borough. And it was estimated that 2/3 of the country's wool production was processed in Bradford. So, of course, less than 10 years later, Bradford has become the wool capital of the world. And as we know, where there's fashion industry is one of the most toxic pollutants.
Get it up on the board.
I get it. It's on the board.
But I'm serious, you know, everything that goes into the processing, I don't know how you process wood, but it will, but you know, the water usage, the toxins in the dye, which at the time, fact checker Chris, maybe you can look this up.
Probably not.
In the 1850s, the ink that was used for fabric was much more toxic than it is now. So this is like going on in the water. I guess it's not totally related, but we're kind of getting a feel.
You know, I feel like we can just put, I mean, just from that whole description, it just seems like olden days should be on the board, right? Like this is just like old times where we're doing old weird things. So obviously well, bad things are going to happen.
I mean, that, but also I think this was a common thing in England, which is these industrial cities that blew up and their living conditions in them was a theme in the mid 1800s that resulted in a lot of, you know, regulations came out of that. And, you know, it was just a disaster. These cities. So olden, yes, but specifically,
industrial revolution, olden times.
I mean, you could throw the industrial revolution up there, but also like, cities growing too fast. That wasn't that one of ours?
One
we love to do.
I mean, I would blame the royals, you know.
Sure.
Just
what about olden industrial rapid expansion days?
I do love that. I love it.
Clayton really needs to get that olden in there, which is I respect.
You got a problem with that? You feeling old or something?
Triggered.
I am. I'm getting to a point where I am that old and I'm getting a little triggered by it.
Sorry.
That's okay.
So let's also talk about the history of sugar. This is really interesting. Before sugar ruled the world, honey was queen. Basically, any part of Europe, Africa, or Asia that isn't covered in ice has bees and thus honey. The first chemically refined sugar appeared on the scene in India about 2,500 years ago. From there, the technique spread eastwards towards China and west towards Persia and the early Islamic worlds, eventually reaching the Mediterranean in the 13th century. Cyprus and Sicily became important centers for sugar production. Throughout the Middle Ages, it was considered a rare and expansive spice rather than an everyday condiment. So get a hold of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, nowadays, sugar is like, I don't know, $1 a pound or something.
It's in everything. We can't, like,
yeah.
There's too many places to put it.
But back then, it was rare. So the first place to cultivate sugar cane explicitly for large-scale refinement and trade was the Atlantic island of Madeira. During the late 15th century, then it was the Portuguese who realized that the new and favorable conditions for sugar plantations existed in Brazil, where a slave-based plantation economy was established. When Brazilian sugar cane was introduced in the Caribbean shortly before 1647, it led to the growth of the industry, which came to feed the sugar craze of Western Europe. In 1791, the British Parliament fails to pass the Slave Trade Abolition Bill, which leads to an abstention movement. Abolitionists boycott slave-grown sugar, and the movement increases the demand for slave-free sugar grown in India. American abolitionists also try to avoid Caribbean-grown sugar, turning to the maple sugar industry. Okay, by 1750, there were 120 sugar refineries operating in Britain, but these could only produce 30,000 tons of sugar per year. So prices were very high. Vast profits were made in the sugar trade, to the extent that sugar was called white gold. The government recognized this and taxed it highly. In 1815, the tax raise from sugar in Britain was a staggering 3 million pounds. So it's like the tax we put on alcohol and now weed, all that kind of stuff. They were putting it on sugar. So this is, at the time, the price of sugar... And fact checker Chris, maybe you can look this up. The price of sugar in the 1850s in Britain, I think was something like, I don't know, a lot of money.
that's reliable. What my facts are. Yes, actually, that is a lot. Exactly a lot of money. Yes. Well, I was looking up synthetic dyes while you were talking about sugar. So I'm a step behind, but I'll get to the sugar too.
So it's a hot commodity right now in the world. And so let's put sugar up on the board just because of its addictive qualities. As we all know, it was treated like a drug at this time, and it's still a drug that is for children, and it's the drug of choice for children.
It's every kid's first addiction.
Oh. It really is.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Now we're going to put the wholesale supplier, Joseph Neal. Now let's get specific. Okay?
Okay. Let's do it.
Jillian London says, Neal and his assistant unknowingly used the arsenic when making Hardiker's peppermint lozenges. Although both Neal and his assistant thought that the color and texture of the lozenges was off, and although both became ill from near or tasting the lozenges, neither of them thought that anything was wrong with the lozenges or attributed their sickness to the lozenges. The Bradford Observer, November 6th, 1858, this is a newspaper at the time, says, John Edmondson said, I was there at the time. Mr. Neal brought 4 bags of lozenges to deliver to Hardiker. Mr. Neal said that the color was not so good as usual. I should be doing this with a British accent.
Please do.
No, we have way too many listeners over there. I will be shamed.
That was not an accurate accent. In Bradford, we don't speak like that. And also, that lady doesn't sound like it either. It's just...
Okay, I'm going to have Suni actually do the accent. but the quality was equally good. That's what they said. Hardiker began to hesitate, and Mr. Neal then said that the size was not such as he usually sold, and that sooner than have them thrown on his hands, he would take a little less for them.
What a dig. Like, fine, I'll take them, but not as much. It's like a slight.
He got a discount.
Mm-hmm.
This was discounted poison.
Unbelievable.
Neal then goes on to say, I was ill after eating the lozenges. See, I'm trying.
Nice.
I vomited several times. I vomited all night. And yet my suspicions were not excited that there was anything wrong.
Oh my gosh. If these people were alive today, they'll be anti-maskers. It would totally be like, it's not COVID. It's not COVID.
Oh. That's a fun parallel.
So this guy knew that these things had the arsenic in it?
Absolutely. I know he didn't know, but he knew that he was sick from them. Hmm.
And that they looked weird. It's like, wait, if this were a head of lettuce, mm-hmm, you would know instantly there's something wrong because it'd be like brown and wilted. But like, because it's candy, you can kind of disguise, you know, I mean, they didn't know, but it's just like, I guess it's just a burnt batch of sugar this time or whatever.
Mm. Wait, but you think he knew he got sick from them, or he was just like, I'm just, you know, I just had something, you know, something didn't sit well in my stomach. I don't know what it is. Like, do you think, I'm not trying to do a British accent. Do not even try to come after me. I literally don't know if he knew that he got sick from the candy. It sounds like he didn't.
That's a good question. I mean, it's a good question, Suni. Because if you, here's how I think. Like, okay, so I'm in the kitchen and I'm making a batch of candies or cookies or whatever you call it. And I always make these cookies, but today they look underbaked, or maybe they're turning, you know, a pinkish reddish color. They're usually the fluffy, doughy, you know, cookies I always make. But I eat them anyway. I'm like, you know what? Who cares? And then I'm violently ill. I don't know. I would think back to the night and be like, what was different? What did I do differently that day?
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
It sounds like they didn't know. He probably was, well, I don't know.
Or he didn't want to lose money.
Right.
On the money he'd already spent on the sugar and daff that he made the candy. So he's like, they're fine. I just was ill. So just sell the crap and get my paycheck.
Yeah,
I think that's true. It's the kind of thing where you use selective reasoning because your own finances are at stake here.
So capitalism's going up. We'll just put
that. Okay. Well, we can put capitalism. Yes, and I just want to say, please, that was also our listener recommendation.
Oh.
The Alarmy is all about Clayton and his agenda.
Maybe the listeners are all just me with different profile names saying capitalism.
It's possible. It's possible.
I never thought.
No.
That's terrible.
This is Josette Ciara. And she's said capitalism, and she has a whole list of reasons that we've already discussed. You know, there's 120 sugar refineries operating in Britain, 300 tons of sugar they're producing. Prices are high. Britain puts a stupid tax on it. So, you know, she's being judgmental about
I approve.
The tax.
I approve. I approve.
Thank you, Josette.
This message.
Thank you, Josette, for the judgment. And yes, so essentially everything is leading back to capitalism, is what Josette says.
And again,
so
the royals
on the board.
The royals started this whole thing.
Okay, so talk to us about
the
royals.
Yes.
Yeah, give us a
second
give
time.
Us some.
Listen,
make your case.
They just truly, first of all, rule the world and colonize the entire world and just make colonization so popular. And then with it, they made, you know, so much money off of slavery. And then they were just like, okay, we cannot do slavery anymore because abolition has happened. So I'm just going to throw some taxes out there. And it just seems like it's a however way they could make money, right? Like they just wanted to make so much money. And then they kicked Meghan Markle out of the palace. So
yeah, a few things happened in between.
In between, just a few.
Oh, okay.
Just like one or two, though.
Not too much. I think that summary is generally a risk.
I mean, you get it. You get the.
Yeah, I get it. I think you make a really good point, and I do think that we should put the royals up and their colonizing ways. Mm-hmm. Because it is, she's right, you know, it's almost like they used slavery to produce all of this sugar for them. And then, you know, once slavery was abolished, they still need their drug.
Right.
So here come the taxes. Now, I think we got it. We have a list of other people that we need to put up on the board. The sweets vendor.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy who actually sold the candy. His name was Humbug Billy. And this is according to Jillian London. Hardiker thought that the color of the lozenges was off when he received the order on October 30th. And he would only agree to pay a lower price than originally agreed upon. Yet he also did not question their purity. After tasting the lozenges himself, Hardiker became violently ill and left for home. Another guy. He leaves. The lozenges remain at his market and they're sold to unknowing and helpless buyers that fateful Saturday afternoon. Everything is then traced back to that store.
Unbelievable. I wonder if food poisoning was like so popular back then because there were no refrigerators. I don't know, were there refrigerators?
That's a good point.
That's a very good point.
Because they were just like, I'm violently ill. And it's like, okay. And it's like, that's food poisoning. And what is going on? You're poisoned by something that you ate.
We have it now, and there's like, you know, a national campaign to recall everything that people are eating. I think that's a very interesting concept to think that people were so used to just getting sick that they wouldn't assume it was a specific ingredient. It was just like a general thing that happened to them.
Yeah. What would you call it? The commonality of food poisoning?
Bad olden food.
Bad old.
Chris, way to really reclaim olden for yourself.
Yes. You know what? I just realized I'm an olden guy. And you know what? I might as well embrace it.
I just have a quick question, Chris. We asked you to look up two facts. Have you been able to come up with any of them?
Well, in 1860, I got the average retail price of sugar, which is 8 cents a pound. Comparable, it's actually pretty cheap.
8 cents a pound?
Yeah.
Are you because sure?
But back then, 8 cents was a lot of money, right?
Average retail price.
Yeah, what is 8 cents? Like,
so 8 cents. Okay, so a pound of cornmeal was 2 cents. A pound of flour, 3 cents. A pound of tea was 50 cents. Tea is usually expensive per pound.
Yeah,
molasses 50 cents. So it's actually relatively cheap. Syrup 60 cents.
Well, but what is? Can you find out the equivalent of 8 cents? Like what's
1858? What's 8 cents to modern day? Like that?
Yeah, inflation.
Backseat fact checkers always yelling at me in the driver's seat, like, "Hey, buddy."
Well, you're telling us 8 cents, you know.
It's like, I know.
I'm gonna estimate like $3. That's my estimation.
Okay, yeah. Let's do a poll. I think it's like in the 30s. I think it's like $30.
Wow, a pound.
Yeah. What do you think, Clay?
I'm gonna say Price is Right rules 29.
Well, while Chris is figuring that out, let's put the druggist assistant, William Goddard, up on the board.
Ooh.
Yes. Mr. Berningston, one of the detectives, began pursuing the source of the sudden deaths and illnesses. First, he visited William Hardiker, who was suffering from eating one of his own lozenges. Then he visited the wholesale supplier, who told him told him that 40 pounds of sugar had been mixed with 12 pounds of daft. We'll get to daft. Sold to him by the druggist Hodgson. When Berningston arrived at Hodgson's, the young assistant William Goddard reported to be a youth was there. The Bradford Observer, again, the newspaper from 1858, says that Detective Berningston said, "I asked him if he had sold any Terra Alba a week ago, the previous Monday." Goddard said, "Do you mean daft?" I said, "Yes." Goddard at once said, "Yes, I sold 12 pounds of daft to a young man who came from Bradford." I said, "Have you any left?" He immediately took me upstairs, and there in a garret, he pointed out a cask from which he had taken the 12 pounds of it. Mr. Neal took some in his fingers and said, "This is not daft." Neal knew at once from the touch when he examined it that this was not daft. Goddard then told me that his master was ill at the time he delivered the article. He asked him where he could find the Daft, and he told him that he would find it in the corner of the room. He went there, as he supposed, and he weighed 12 pounds of it from the cask and delivered it for Daft. While we were trying to find whether there was a label on the cask, Mr. Hodgson came in, and I immediately said to him, calling his attention to the cask, "Mr. Hodgson, what does it contain? And he immediately replied, "Arsenic." I found that the Daft was in an opposite corner of the room from where the arsenic was. The coroner said that there seemed to be no question about this being a mistake. The simple question would be, had there been ordinary care manifested with regard to the arsenic? Mm-hmm. If there had not been such an ordinary care, then the act will be a criminal one. Mm-hmm. So for the record, Goddard was immediately arrested. Prosecution was later withdrawn. So not...
It was an oopsie, a forgivable oopsie daisy.
Wow. I mean, at the time it was forgivable, but I think nowadays,
oh my god,
this is an unforgivable oopsie
You're
daisy.
Done.
Well, we talk about this a lot. It's negligence is just as bad as not just as bad, but is a version of bad.
Yeah, and let's talk about this druggist. Hodgson.
Well, hang on a second.
Okay, yes.
Before you go into, I mean, because I feel like we just read a passage from like a really lame Sherlock Holmes or something.
Like a bad.
And then I found out that it was arsenic. Not a British accent. Again, I'm just making voices. No,
exactly. I just want to circle back to the price of sugar so people know. Does anybody want to guess? Because I did the calculations.
We did. We guessed.
All right. What were your guesses?
30, 29, and what did you say, Suni? $8?
Yeah. It's not. I think I said 3 or 5. Oh, I don't even know. Something less than 10. Less than 10.
You said 30?
I said 30.
Jeez. No, it's Suni's close. It's $2.72.
There you go. Okay. See?
I don't know. I thought I read that sugar was really expensive. Anyway, someone
Rebecca
will
doesn't buy
write
sugar.
In. Someone's going to write in and tell us about the price of...
Yeah, I'd be curious to know the significance of those facts. I mean, a guest expert might be necessary to sort of contextualize all that for us.
Now, druggist Hodgson, according to the Bradford Observer, Detective Bernson, there was one great fault on the part of Hodgson. He knew that he had left the cask exposed in the manner and without a label. The young man had been only 3 weeks in Mr. Hodgson's service, and he had no practice at all in the trade.
Labels, put
no,
labels up
jar
on the board.
Labels, definitely.
Yeah, and not paying, you know, he got cheap labor, right? This was not someone who was trained in any way, you know. It's like he was a cheap druggist. Mm. Like, get someone who's qualified and pay a livable wage.
He was like the original Johnson & Johnson.
Johnson & Johnson is not happy with that comparison, but yes.
I'm just basing this on vaccines. That's
no,
all I'm doing.
You are totally making this, bringing this into the present day.
Yeah.
This is great for our listeners.
Liverpool Mercury says that this terrible catastrophe disclosed a reckless and stupid negligence in the traffic in deadly poison, which is a disgrace to law and civilization. We fear that there are plenty of druggists all over England who keep lads in their shops as ignorant as Goddard is said to be, and who allow the most active of poison to be freely retailed by boys who cannot tell arsenic from plaster of Paris.
My God.
Raw youths fresh from school costs less than educated and competent shopmen, and unscrupulous or thoughtless employers, pressed hard perhaps by competition, prefer the cheap article. So, following Goddard's arrest, Hodgson was later arrested, and of course, he was acquitted on December 21st.
This reminds me of the Action Park episode we talked about, where they would hire security, but they would just be these teenagers who would just party along with the rest of the guests of the water park.
Again, capitalism. Yeah. It goes back to capitalism, because you just want to make the most with spending the least, and you don't care about people. It's just
bingo.
Right. Not sustainable. That's not sustainable.
It's totally not. And I think I also want to put on the lack of security of poison. you know?
Just poison laying around.
Yeah, where is the lock and key?
But seriously. If you're going to have poison, I don't know, make sure it's labeled. That's a good idea.
This right? goes back to olden days. It's just like everyone was too casual. They thought nothing would go wrong.
Yeah, it's like putting water next to Clorox. Like, what are you doing?
Yes, absolutely.
In unmarked jars.
You know, like, you know, drink something and figure it out later.
And then people are drinking it. It's like, doesn't smell like water. And you're like, it's fine. Just give me 50 cents less for the cup of water.
Capitalism right there.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot that I had, okay, so the price of sugar is high. I did have a section on the price of sugar.
Mm.
And perhaps as the price of sugar was so prohibitive, it was often mixed with cheaper substances as daft. And then this inferior sugar would be sold to the working classes. Classic. Daft was a mixture of substances such as powdered limestone and plaster of Paris. Not tasty, but perfectly safe. Both daft and arsenic trioxide are white powders. The arsenic trioxide was not properly labeled, as we know, and was just stored next to the daft.
Wow.
That is a nightmare.
I mean, I'm glad to find out the origins of the band Daft Punk. I had no idea.
I think the word has changed in meaning.
Oh, really? I was like, look at Daft Punk. Bring it back.
But I think it's used in England, and some of our listeners in the Alarmy can tell us about Daft. But Daft, I think, means sort of like frivolous and sort of like foolish. Uh-huh. And I think there's a comp there where it's like, it's really like a nothing, right?
It's
like
fool's sugar that they're mixing.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I guess, yeah.
I think that I'm serious. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm.
It's like the high corn syrup of the time, maybe.
She goes, bringing it back to the current.
Are you being daft?
She's our pop culture go-to. Right. He's current always.
Yes.
Again,
she's
not
a DJ
purpose,
for but pop culture.
Are you being Daft Punk?
But there's two more things I want to talk about before we start knocking things off the list.
Oh my gosh.
The dehumanization of the poor. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because this is something that they used this plaster of Paris or Daft, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. for the candy, for the stuff that was sold to the working class people of the town. I'm sure if you were making a little candies for the queen, Suni, you wouldn't put daft in your candy.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Suni would put the arsenic in there.
Exactly.
Full arsenic.
Oops, it wasn't labeled.
So I just feel like, you know, this is something we've seen before. We saw it in the Flint water crisis.
Exactly.
You know, if rich people are dying, then there's an outrage. Or if people, if they're getting sick, there's an outrage. But if it's the working class, it's like, oh, well, it was a mistake. Let those guys off the hook.
Right.
They're sturdy. They'll figure it out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, remember vitamin water? We're giving vitamin water to the poor. And it was no vitamins in it. Like, they literally did a research and vitamin water had no vitamins in it.
That's a case of a label that's not correct.
That's messed up.
It's insane.
Can we put 50 Cent up on the board? He owns a large share of vitamin water.
Oh, wow. Okay, I guess.
Are there vitamins in vitamin water?
If you put him, you got to put Coca-Cola because I think they make it. And the sand is also not real water.
We're going to put vitamin water up, but I also want to put adulteration of food.
Ooh.
So in the 19th century, food adulteration was the rule rather than the exception. While there were movements toward reform at the time of the Bradford sweets poisoning, the English public was often thought to be apathetic on the topic of adulteration. This is according to Noel Coley, The Fight Against Food Adulteration. Mm. And it says, some of the commonly used additives in the 19th century were poisonous. To whiten bread, for example, bakers sometimes added alum and chalk to the flour. For mashed potatoes, plaster of Paris, pipe clay, and even sawdust could be added to increase the weight of their loaves. Rye flour or dried powdered beans could be used to replace wheat flour, and the sour taste of stale flour could be disguised with ammonium carbonate. Mm-mm. Brewers, too, often added mixtures of bitter substances, some containing poisons like strychnine, to improve the taste of the beer and save in the cost of hops. By the beginning of the 19th century, the use of such substances in manufactured foods and drinks was so common that town dwellers had begun to develop a taste for adulterated foods and drinks. White bread and bitter beer were in great demand. So people are like, you know what? I like this messed up stuff.
Unbelievable.
Chemist Frederick Accum was the first to sound the alarm about food adulteration in 1820. Accum remarked that the art of counterfeiting and adulteration had developed in England to such an extent that spurious articles of all kinds could be found everywhere. But he regarded the adulteration of food and drink as a criminal offense. The man who robs a fellow subject of a few shillings on the highway is sentenced to death, he wrote. But he who distributes a slow poison to the whole community escapes unpunished. Mm-hmm. How about that? Mm-hmm. How about that?
I mean, we haven't learned anything because apparently we're still doing the same thing.
We're still doing it.
The things that we're putting in, you know, like chicken, apparently they were bleaching the chickens so they would look white. Chicken, like everyone wanted to just eat white chicken, and apparently they literally put Clorox in it. And we haven't learned anything. Oh, the royals, they taught us everything we know, and they have destroyed everything.
So is there anything else that we want to put up on the board before we start knocking things off?
I do just want to add that I did do a little bit of research on the fashion industry at this time. And just a note is that what's interesting and what happened was what you're talking about is the synthetic dyes sort of became popular. And then that would sort of democratize fashion in a way where people who used to be able to afford high fashion could only afford these natural dyes or whatever, or clothing made with these natural dyes, which is a much longer, laborious process. They made these synthetic dyes. Now everybody could have a bright green frock.
Your dress doesn't have to be brown all the time.
I don't know what it has to do with selling poison candy to little kids, but it was definitely something that I spent the majority of the podcast looking at. So
obsessed.
I should, you know, I don't know.
I just thought of? Like, these are not even like cookies or like, not even like a lollipop. These are like peppermint lozenges. Like, who in the world thought these Hall's lozenges were like good candy for kids? Like these were like a commodity for kids. Kids will love the minty flavor of this thing because they're, I don't know. It should not be a candy flavor. Peppermint is just for people over 50. Like, come on.
Okay, but wait a minute, the dental industry?
What do you mean?
Well, the fact that, you know, people wanted peppermint because it made their fresh breath because they weren't brushing their teeth because it was ye olden days.
Okay, so that's the dentist good. Come back. Okay.
That's possibly. I would also just say shitty candy. shitty candy at the time. I mean, think about all the great options for candy we have these days.
Yeah,
I'm going to share this story because I feel like we've gone a little over. So I'm going to just move us right along.
Okay, so let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to start knocking things off the list.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Who's to blame for the 1858 Bradford Suites poisoning? The fashion industry? Olden industrial rapid expansion days? Sugar? Capitalism? The royals and their colonizing ways? Humbug Billy? Bad olden food? Joseph Neal? Druggist assistant William Goddard? Druggist Hodgson? No labels? What the F? Cheap labor / pay a livable wage? Lack of security for poison, dehumanization of the poor, 50 Cent for owning part of vitamin water, or the adulteration of food.
Sunya, can you see the list? I shared it on the screen. Yeah. Can you see it?
Yeah, I can see it, yeah.
Okay, great.
Okay, really good list we've done. Really good work we've done, people.
I'm proud. I
am too. I think that we can put no labels. We can fold that lack of security for poison.
Okay.
I'm doing go shorty, it's your birthday.
Lack of regulation.
Like it's your birthday.
Lack of regulation. Where are we seeing this? Oh. Lack of security for point. Yeah, we can fold that into that. We can keep that on. Let's see here. Bad olden food. I mean, that is actually really a good point. You know, it's just like everyone is just used to being sick all the time. Sugar, the sugar addiction. That's a good one as well. Perhaps we should take out the olden industrial rapid expansion days. I think this is a little bit more.
Yeah, this is a little bit more niche.
That's like more macro than it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Micro. And perhaps we can take the fashion industry off as well.
Oh, sorry.
Sadly.
For being toxic. And I like how Clayton pointed out here, but not Britney toxic.
Yes. She's free, yeah, Clayton's baby.
Clayton's added a little comment to almost all of these blame.
It's my flair.
Items.
It's my flair. So,
yeah.
Just, you know.
The royals and their colonizing ways, that should stay up for just a bit. All the people who were involved in this, Humbug Billy, Joseph Neal, the druggist assistant, and druggist Hodgson, it's like the guilty parties or something.
Mm. It's like they all, that tornado of like just total ineptitude had to kind of all come together in order for it to happen. So it seems like it's hard to pinpoint one person, although the druggist who was like, oh, it's in the different thing without the label, like he's more a problem.
I feel like, right. Yeah, like the one that put these two containers in the same place without the labels, because the assistant probably didn't know. And he was probably underpaid and was like, fuck this job. You know, like... was not happy to go down to the basement or whatever this was, maybe the attic. Like, I don't know. The guy, the owner, listen.
Yeah, so let's keep the druggist Hodgson up on the board and we can take out the other guys.
Okay, okay.
Now, 50 Cent is still up on the board for owning Vitamin Water. So the guys who actually were part of this have been removed from the list. But 50 Cent is still up there.
Listen, remove him before.
We'll take him down. We'll take him down.
Before people start asking for that to be its own episode. How Vitamin Water became, you know.
Okay, so cheap labor, paying a livable wage. I think we can take out the dehumanization of the poor, actually, because I think it's more than that.
It's the royals. It's the royals. It's truly the royals.
So, and their colonizing way. I think we can take the royals off, Suni. I know that you're going to be really upset.
I'm upset. I'm done. Bye, everyone.
But definitely some blame. I do agree that they have. You're at the top. You're ultimately in charge, right? So these
are the architects of this.
They did deserve to be up on the board. Mm-hmm. Sugar itself is still up there for being so addictive. I think we can take sugar off, right? Is it their fault that they're so good? Is it sugar's fault that it's so sweet?
No.
Well, then you have to go back to who discovered sugar, right? And so they should.
But that's the thing. Like, sugar was a plant, and cane sugar was great, and it was like a fun thing to have to hydrate yourself. And then they just freaking turned it into poison, just like cocaine and weed.
Hmm. And we know what that points to. They used it to make money.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the plant's fault. It's not the plant's fault.
We've got a really good list right now. And I'm here it is. Capitalism, the bad olden food, druggist Hodgson, cheap labor or not paying a livable wage, and adulteration of food. Adulteration of food, to me, is really standing out.
Mm.
See,
because
but I
that does fold in capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
It is true.
But I would have kept the royals instead of cheap labor because they created they created the cheap labor.
Oh, that's such a good point.
Maybe they need
that's
a
really
slap.
Good point. So let's take the cheap labor off.
Okay.
And I apologize. We should have taken that off before the royals. And I think, you know, I think the being used to olden food, bad olden food, is actually folds into the adulteration of food.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
So we've got capitalism, the druggist, and adulteration. And here's what I'm thinking. And you tell me what you think. I think we should send adulteration of food to the alarmist jail and slap the druggist.
Okay.
Adulteration of food, it's about how you took the purest form of the food or of the item, and then you added things that did not belong into it, right? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, correct.
Which I would say folds into capitalism. Mm-hmm. Call me biased.
Well,
but like you do that because you want to make more money, right?
Yeah, but it's sort of like, you know, it's an extension of making margins and making more money,
right?
But it's a very specific, you know, practice. You're lying to the public in a very specific and intentional way.
You're saying that's capitalism.
You're saying yes, but it's a very. But my point is that it's. I don't know if we want to nail for this particular tragedy. What part of capitalism is most to blame?
Okay,
I like that. That makes sense.
I listening to you guys talk has actually changed my mind, and I think this might be where you were going with this, Suni. Like the adulteration of food, so it's like adding other things, and in this particular case. They were adding DAFT, which in all fairness, it doesn't taste good, but it's not, it won't kill you per
poison,
se.
Right.
Right. And the actual mistake happened because of the druggist. The problem was arsenic, you know, the mix up of the arsenic. So I'm actually thinking that I want to change what I just said and send the druggist to jail and slap adulteration of food. That feels more comfortable for me.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. I like the adulteration of food being involved in the ultimate, in some way, in the ultimate verdict. So it's fine for me.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you guys think?
For me,
and the drugs will say, "I did it because of capitalism."
And soon
you
will get
really,
that in.
You are really singing my song. So.
Yeah, she's definitely a member of the Alarm. okay, I'm going to call it. Adulteration of food. You're getting the big slap. Druggist Hodgson. You're going to the alarmist jail. Pack your drugs.
We got a new favorite inmate.
Oh my God, we put a drug dealer into the jail.
Wow.
Good job.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Oh my God. And no one lost their teeth, you know? No one really.
No, they just lost their life. So.
You don't need teeth if you don't have a life.
You don't need to eat.
Listen, give the kids all the candy. I mean, it's just let them live. Just don't put arsenic in it.
That's right. Let them live. I mean, thank you so much, Suni, for joining us and helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for this terribly sad mix, you know, unnecessary tragedy, the unreal. Bradford Suites poisoning.
Unreal. But also, I am so grateful that it happened because I would have not been here if it didn't happen.
So, that's right. Know, bringing it to the present. Yes.
A positive present spin. Thank you,
I'm just kidding. I am truly sorry for everyone that died. And it's crazy, but I hope we learn our lesson. And I love our conversation. And this was truly awesome. Thank you so much, Alarmy. Thank you.
Thank you, Suni.
Don't mess with people's food.
That's right.
The year after the tragedy in Bradford, the bill to regulate the keeping and sale of poisons was passed, requiring all poisons to be sold in containers distinctly labeled with the word poison in large capital letters. In addition, the name and address of the person selling the poison would be on the container. In 1860, the first Food Adulteration Act was passed, though it didn't prove successful. Later legislation, including the Sale of Food and Drugs Act of 1875 or the Margarine Act of 1887 and the Second Food Adulteration Act of 1899, led to considerable improvements in regulating food products and ensuring this fatal mistake would not be made again. You think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at the alarmist the on Twitter, at the alarmist podcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the death of Natalie Wood.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.